Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live daily on American Freedom Radio. Not exactly daily, 4 days a week, you know, keep up with the play. And for those of you who are listening live, thank you very much for doing so. And if you would be so kind as to do that little extra step to let people know that you are listening live and to share the Facebook post and things of that nature, just when the show's on, just flick up a link or something. Hey, everybody, this is what I'm listening to. That would really help, you know, and I'd be quite appreciative of that. And the network would love you too. We do want people to hear the truth, but the problem is, when you speak it really bluntly and you're not held back by taboos, you are likely to offend not only some people, but most people, probably all. On a long enough timeline, if you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, you will be offended. All right? Trust me, I know, because there's been things that have been that I've done on this show that have offended me. I mean, mate, it gets crazy up in here. But if you can see through that little veneer, and recognize it for what it is, a fun time. I mean, really, things are real dark all the time, and we're going to talk about dark subjects, of course. But we're not going to make you afraid, and we're not going to try and sell you something on to counterpoint with that fear. You know? The Vinnie Eastwood Show. The only thing worse than the truth is Vinnie's jokes. And my very special guest, joining me now, the biggest whistleblower of the century when it comes to Freemasonry here, 32nd degree Freemason. Author of the Filthy Rituals of Freemasonry, James Robert Wright, is a former and paid member of the Supreme Council of the Scottish Rite in Dallas, Texas, and is derived from a rich chocolatey bloodline linking him to dozens of historical figures like JFK, Princess Diana, just to name two. He offers a unique insight as the century's biggest Freemasonic whistleblower. Now, insight into the world's largest secret society with over 1 million members, and how it's kept the bulk of its followers completely into the dark as to what the higher level members do. His website is dialmformason.weebly.com. He has his own show, and I believe he's working on something else called the Real Freemasons of Beverly Hills. James, welcome to the show.
Hey, Vinny, how you doing?
Well, somewhat fabulous is my standard response.
It's been a long time. You've been busy like me.
Yeah. Have you ever noticed that you get so busy exposing scumbaggery that you don't see people for a period of time, and when you come back, you kind of have to pick up where you left off because so much has happened since then?
Oh, yeah, and to compound matters, I mean, I live in Los Angeles, so on the positive side, I've got this plethora of activists and, you know, really top-of-their-field people that I'm hanging around and working on projects with. But on the flip side of that, yeah, no one ever sees you, and they're like, are you still alive? What are you doing? I'm like, well, I'm a little pinball in a little pinball machine called California, that's all. So
it's a big
but
place.
But it's all good. Yeah, it is. Well, you know, I mean, Los Angeles is most of the southern half of the state, so not as big as Texas, so to me it's smaller.
It's got more people in it, though. Isn't it like the biggest state in the union per population?
That might be, although, I mean, I don't know, considering the population of Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin, Houston, El Paso, Amarillo, and then all the underlying cities below that. I don't know. It might be a duel, but I think California and Texas should duel, like maybe the governors or something, you know, to decide that.
Well, this brings me to an interesting point. I believe that in politics, fights to the death over political opinion should be legalized. So,
yes.
Yeah. somebody says, we want to invade Iraq, and the other guy says, we don't want to invade Iraq. Okay, I challenge you to a fight to the death. You know, it'll be great. It'll be like the banker games.
I challenge you to a duel, sir. Have you brought your pistol?
I wonder what kind of pistol they'd have on them, you know. Would it be one of those kind of, like, wussy little ones that James Bond does, you know?
Yeah, one of those wussy little Masonic pistols, yeah.
Yeah, or it'd be like some kind of old-fashioned, like, blunderbuss-looking pistol or something like that that they've had inherited down from through the bloodlines and things like that, and he has to actually shove a thing into it with some powder and a ball and what have you in order to get it to fire, except it'll misfire and shoot himself in the face. You know, I
well,
hope that's
sir, I believe I would have to dispense a nice bitch slap before you could powder your rifle.
Well, what you do is you powder the glove before you slap him in the face with it, because that way it leaves a powdery mark of an imprint of a glove on his face.
Or just black ink, you know.
Well, that's just kind of permanent, you know. That's not gentlemanly.
Well, it's a scarlet letter type of a situation. That's why I would elect to use that. But
I think it's more like a Gone with the Wind situation.
A scarlet Gone with the Wind slap?
It just gets weirder and weirder, doesn't it? So speaking of which, okay, well, what have you been up to recently? Because you've been talking a lot about how you've been rubbing shoulders with a lot of different influential and creative people, trying to get this kind of topic of Freemasonry and the corruption at the very top tiers of it into public light. How's that been going?
I would say here in the last month or two, excuse me, it's definitely taken an interesting turn. I'm not sure exactly how to explain this, but let me start with this. Right now, as we speak, the Grand Lodge of Tennessee has gone, the Grand Master specifically, he's not acting on behalf of a group or a gang of Masons, if you will. He's acting of his own reconnaissance and abusing his office, and he's using that to target, again, two gay members of the fraternity there in Tennessee. And the reason, these two members in question, they're very, very highly decorated with the Templar stuff and all, you name it, they've got it as an award or a ribbon or a pin or just a lifelong. I mean, these are two guys who are, like, I believe in their 50s. So they've been doing this for quite some time. Matter of fact, I would say that they've done more than me in those environments. I just have that golden ticket of where I worked for the Supreme Council, and maybe 100 Masons on the planet currently living can say that. So what happened was these two got gay married, and so all of a sudden, after decades, it was a problem, right? And so the Grand Master has attempted to suspend them both, awaiting what they call Masonic trial. And this is now the third time this is happening. It happened before to that brother in Kentucky, you know, with that leaked audio I did. And then, of course, I was the first. And it's to a point now where there's actually a lot of Masons on the inside who are really, really fed up with it, and they're tired of it because they don't feel that way and they don't believe in targeting other brothers that way and everything. So let's just say I received a phone call from someone not from Tennessee but in that region who was aware of what was going on, and by the time he called me, I had briefly read about it. If your audience is curious to know, just Google the phrase gay Freemason Tennessee, and the number one thing that'll come up in your search will be a link to a blog posting on a blog site called freemasonsfordummies.com, and in it you can read absolutely everything that I'm talking about right here that led up to where we're now at. Okay, so I get this phone call, and they're saying, you know, we're sick of this. Everybody's terrified of what you're about to do. And I'm like, whoa, 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 back up a second. Say that again. So everybody's terrified about what you're about to do. And I'm like, Mason's terrified of me. I like this. I like the sound of that. So, yeah, I did my homework on the subject and found out that it's just the most heinous excuse or example, rather, yet of them gang stalking and doing all these things, abusing their power and their privilege that they should not be doing. So, what I've done is I have launched a campaign against the Grand Master of Masons in Tennessee. His name is Philip Hastings, and I've been having all of their social media in any form that that exists bombarded. In the past week, they've had to completely shut down all of their social media. It's my understanding that their phones and their email are jammed, so I've quickly destroyed their ability to communicate. And in addition to that, I've created a bit of a mock Facebook page of the Grand Lodge of Tennessee. So if anybody's curious to look that up, it's quite funny. You'll have a good laugh. It's under Facebook, under the Grand Lodge of Tennessee, except mine is called the most F-D Grand Lodge of Tennessee, which is sort of a cute little abbreviation for, you know, effed. So yeah, I'm having some fun with it, making it ultra, ultra gay looking. And not only that, but I'm exposing all the bits and pieces of the ritual that I still, as of 2015, have not yet exposed. And my threat to that Grand Master is I'm going to continue releasing every bit of the ritual until there's none left every day at 5 p.m. Pacific until you resign. And that is my goal. I want him to resign. I want this so-called Masonic trial, which is just a fancy way of saying BS, called off, and I want them to get out of this brother's life and leave him and his husband alone. Otherwise, my wrath can get a whole lot uglier, as Texas and other states can vouch for. So that's, you know, you got to fight them with their own weapons and their own tactics. And so far, it would appear to be winning, although I don't have a resignation letter in my hot little hand yet, but that's all right. I'll get one. I'm determined.
And the lesson in all of this is don't mess with a gay Texan Freemason.
Who watched a little bit too much J.R. Ewing growing up, yeah.
Maybe a little bit much Starsky and Hutch.
Yeah, well, I mean, someone's got to do it, and that was actually the reason the phone call I mentioned came through from some Masonic officials, we'll call them, and they basically, long story short, said, you know, you're really the only one that could actually do anything about this, and which kind of blew my mind. But then they elaborated and said, you know, if one of us was to do something, we would just turn into a victim of our own system. They would come at us with the same red tape, the same quote-unquote Masonic charges, blah, 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 make their life a living hell, whereas I seem to operate, you know, outside of those boundaries and outside of that narrow-minded little corridor of what you can and cannot do, which the majority would be cannot. And so, yeah, I'm using my knowledge of Freemasonry to attack this guy and out him and drag everything that's going on in Tennessee out into the open. And I think they're probably all in meltdown mode, kind of like that scene when Indiana Jones and the Nazis open the lid of the Ark. That's basically what's happening.
The face is melting off with the absolute sheer terror of being exposed to public light. Now, it just reminds me that psychopaths only fear two things: exposure and worse psychopaths.
Precisely, now, and that is why I feel I need to take away the toy. When a small child is misbehaving and throwing tantrums and getting into fights with the other children on the playground, you take away the toy that is the source of the problem. So that is my raison d'etre, if you please.
Who dares wins. Now, when it comes down to this sort of thing, this public spectacle, I haven't actually recalled so much sort of media attention on the Brotherhood than of in recent times. Is that your summation as well? There's like increasing coverage of this issue?
Yes, I would hope that I've been a big contributor to that. Then, of course, they've also been pumping the PR machine out of desperation to try and drum up more membership. But the funny thing that I roll around on the floor laughing my butt off is, you know, everything they try, like everything they do, they just bumble up. And it's like they're their own worst enemy. So they dispatch someone, one of their PR goons to the public to say, oh no, but it's the, oh, it's so wonderful, and oh, we're not that bad. And then here I come, you know, and smoke that out of the water. And it's like they can't win for losing. And I keep getting stronger, and I'm very proud of that. And it's the power of the indie media. It's growing. Never underestimate what we can do with the indie media. They are running freaking scared.
Well, see, me, I always am fairly hopeless and faithless about these kind of things. However, I do what I can anyway, despite, you know, my hopelessness, because I know that if I don't do anything, it's certainly going to be a worse outcome, and I certainly won't affect it.
Well, I would say that the tables have turned there now, haven't they? Because once upon a time, they were pursuing me. They were dogging me. They were running campaigns against me. And now, the sort of public whatever has shifted, and now I'm coming at them. They're running from me. I'm gathering the dirt on them. They're freaking out because of me. And I'm very happy with that because, one, it sort of feels like vindication. On the other hand, it feels like just a slight dose of revenge for the things they did to me. Third, it's actually, believe it or not, seeming to get something done for once around that place, which, as we all know, can't stand the prospect of change or evolution or anything of the kind. So they seem to be the last faction of a grouping of people in America that are clinging on to these Strom Thurmond 1920s values of, you know, all sex must be vaginal and none of that nasty satanic rock music, which, you know, that's ironic. We'll get, that's a whole other show. But yeah, no, it's interesting. I think there's no other time in the world where a situation like this could unfold. And it's interesting. We're in interesting times, and they themselves are just stupefied when it comes to how to handle the media, how to win people over to their ridiculous, antiquated cause, and it's not working, bottom line.
I'm just thinking about this. Like, let's say we're right and we're delivering this positive message about the exposure. Now, here's the one thing. Would it make people more interested and want to get involved, or would it make them sit back and go, oh, thank God it's being handled now?
I'm sure there's both. I'm sure the ones who are thinking, oh, thank God it's handled now, are the guys on the inside who have been waiting for it to give a little. But the people on the outside looking in, I don't think it swayed their opinion one bit. I think every time something new comes out, people react kind of like, well, it's just kind of what we suspected all along anyway. So, no, I don't think that their membership has had any recent spikes, and nor will it either. And of course they could have those things, but see, you know, they won't listen. And it's funny how they can still to this day, after all that's happened, call me for advice and yet completely ignore it. You know, so whatever. I mean, it's a situation, as far as I'm concerned, where, once again, these guys love having this little thing called power. And when they have this little thing called power, they can't bear the thought of letting it go. And so there we are.
This whole lust for power, how exactly does it work in a secret society sense? I mean, I'm pretty straightforward. I know a number of Masons, even in my own life, and they have no idea what it's like at the top echelons at all. You know, and you say things about this and they just kind of go quiet.
Oh yeah, no, the power I had, when I worked in that position, I could simply pick up my phone in my office or pick up my cell phone. I could call any lodge in the world. I could call any kind, or a higher authority like a district officer or a grand lodge or whatever, and say, yes, hello, this is James Wright calling from the office of the Secretary General in Dallas, blah, 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 blah. And it, whatever there was I had to say or a message I had to relay, I mean, it would get done. And that's the kind of weight that carried. And these guys lust after that. That's why I think so many of them targeted me. Yeah, there were the ones that were homophobic, but the vast majority, it was just simple high school jealousy. And so they felt that they had to do whatever to remove me so that the rest of them could try and continue slitting each other's throats to get a position like that. And it's still going on. And especially like with this case going on in Tennessee, I mean, it's utterly despicable. You're going to sit and wait until two different guys have given their entire lives to all the charity causes on the lower. We're not talking about occultists here who are in it for that, or random social climbers who are in it for that. We're talking about just your good old average Joe Masons who have been doing all the fundraisers and everything else their entire lives, and they're going to go and just crap all over them and target them now for gang stalking and everything. Why? Because they committed the crime of falling in love and getting married legally. It's just despicable.
What a heinous crime, bro.
Yeah, yeah. And so they're going to learn one way, whether they like it or not. I am going to continue coming down on Grandmaster Philip Hastings with the heat of 1,000 Templars, and if he doesn't like it, I suggest he resigns quickly.
Has this happened before? Have you actually managed to get anybody resigned before, or this would be number one?
This would be the first time I've set out with that as a goal, but it's not the first. The day that my book was published, all the way back on New Year's Day 2012, the entire administration in Dallas that I worked with resigned the day after, except for one guy named Buck Howard, who, fortunately, I just heard the news. It was been about 2 weeks ago now. It was the morning of September 11th, ironically. Seems the universe is not without a sense of humor, that he was found dead in his Dallas mansion at the ripe old age of 61. So there, I would like to file it in the drawer of karmic retribution. Was there something else going on? Who knows? And frankly, I don't care, because we're talking about one of the most evil people I ever personally encountered on a regular basis. And the fact that he no longer has a pulse, to me, says the world is now a much better place.
I was talking with a couple of guys the other night, and came to this realization is that good people die young and real bad people seem to like live forever. And you wonder how much better the world would be if certain people had managed to live longer, and how much better it would be if certain people died a lot earlier.
That is a mind trip. I mean, you brought up Diana in your intro, and I mean, imagine just that one woman. Imagine had she lived. We might be having world freaking peace right now. She was going to marry that Muslim. They were having a house built in Malibu, true story. The pictures of it are at the Getty Museum. I mean, she was going to pull her kids. You would have probably seen the dissolution of the monarchy in Britain. You would have probably seen Muslims and Christians living together happily like cats and dogs. I mean, a lot would have happened. Another person, Benazir Bhutto, Prime Minister of Pakistan, she was assassinated. Had she lived, you would have seen Pakistan currently in a whole much better situation than it is. We can make the same argument about JFK. We can make the same argument about so many of these people. So, unfortunately, we're living in this darker reality. Maybe if string theory and the quantum universe theories are true, then there's a universe out there where those people lived. And I wish I could teleport to it, but I'm stuck here doing this work here, trying to make this reality a little bit better, it would seem. Which, I'm up for the task, but I don't know. I mean, it's like, when do we get a rest, you know? When do the light workers get to go to Tahiti, you know, just to lounge about and let everybody else take care of everything for a little while? That's kind of the conundrum I'm at.
Well, I think it's kind of the Achilles conundrum, actually. You got a choice of a long and unfulfilled kind of peaceful life, or a short and glorious life that people will remember till the end of time.
Possibly. Yeah, I mean, only the good die young. Yeah, it's just weird. I don't know. And like with that Buck guy, I mean, he died at 61. By today's terms, that's not that old. I would have figured that he was so mean that he would have lived to at least be 130, but wonders never cease.
Well, it's amazing what you can do with artificial pig hearts these days.
Oh, yeah, no, that I think he'd be a perfect candidate for one, but no, it's just, it's weird. I would have thought with all that money he had and clout and everything else, they would have had his head in a jar, you know, still running the Scottish Rite. So, but not so
much. I have ridden the mighty moonworm.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. No, they wish, you know, and like most of these Masons that get up in the higher tiers of the place, they want to be immortal. You know, not in the sense of like Dracula and then you're a vampire, more immortal, but more in the sense that they're so super wonderful of people, right, that statues should be bronzed of them and paintings should be commissioned of them. And yeah, no, where's my torch? Where's my smelting machine?
Yeah. Grab your pitchforks and find a tall tree. That's, you know, it's yeah, a good start. I mean, it's not perfect, but it's a good place to start.
Yeah, so, I mean, if anyone out there listening, if anyone's feeling a hankering to cuss out a Mason or say, hey, buddy, you're not my friend, pal, you know, or whatever, I would definitely look up on Facebook the Grand Lodge of Tennessee and let Mr. Grandmaster Philip Hastings, or should I say Miss, have it with words. With words. I'm not advocating violence. Let him have it with words.
Yeah. You can shove your occult geometry up your ass.
See, perfect. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just trying to take this as seriously as I can, but I can't. Just watching these people scuttle around like little cockroaches under a flashlight, you know.
Well, that's actually when I started this little campaign of mine to start, for want of a better word, troll him. I would have thought that they would have come back at me the way they always do with full force, and they would have blocked all these things and maybe found a way to trash my Facebook or something. But no, quite the contrary. They're like cockroaches. You just said it perfect. They are scattering like I am running through the Grand Lodge with a can of Raid. Yeah.
But what's problematic is you can just never get rid of the bastards.
Well, you know, as they continue to die off...
You need to freaking fumigate. All right, see, there's got to be some kind of a lockdown, you know, some kind of a big top circus three-ring kind of thing that we could bring in here. Lock down the entire Freemasonic establishment and just kind of like sit there for a bit and then just purge the cockroaches out of it, you know. It's just like, no, nope, that's a bad one, it's a bad one, it's a bad one. And then, you know, hopefully there might actually be a secret society that isn't based on scumbaggery.
That is true, but, you know, for that to happen, and believe me, I fantasized about that happening, but I don't see it happening, and the reason is because even, like, the officials that called me after all these years, what I said when they told me the problem, and, whoa, we can't do anything about it, blah, blah, I said, so what you're saying is, between all of you, collectively, there's not one nutsack. Well, no, it's not that. No, it is that. What you're saying is that you are afraid of this guy when you're actually his boss. So, what is the problem? I'm not understanding this. You've got a guy. Let's pretend this is a corporate workplace. Okay, you've got a lower tier manager who's sexually harassing two people under him. So, fire him. What do you not? Oh, well, no, we need the Masonic trial. No, forget your committees and your red tape and all this nonsense and Masonic jargon from the 17th century. To hell with it. To hell with this guy. To hell with all this crap. Fire him. Oh, okay, all right, then you know what? Assemble the Grand Lodge and have a vote of no confidence and oust him like that. Oh, well, let's do that. All right, you know what? So, in other words, you're just inept to manage your own organization. That's fine. I'll do it through the media. I'll get rid of the problem. And I'm not going to do it the way you like. So, yep. And that's another thing. If anyone is curious to know bits and pieces of this ritual, I've been letting it all out. 5 p.m. every day Pacific on this Facebook page until this guy resigns. So,
what have you released so far?
Oh, all the stuff from the whole walkthrough. I wrote it down in screenplay format, you know, from the moment you walk in the door and you go through the initiation procedure and all of that. That's there. The Fellowcraft degree, the Master Mason degree. Now I'm uploading all the stuff like the Order of Business and just all of those Masonic, staunch, written ways, the verbiage of conducting anything within a Masonic lodge, stuff that's never seen the light of day. And, of course, they would counter that and say, oh, no, that stuff's all on Google and you can find it. No, the PSYOP stuff that they themselves have released over the years on the internet is on Google, and it's not accurate at all. I would call that stuff 30, maybe 40 at best, percent accurate. And they do that on purpose to make it look, oh, well, this isn't so bad. There's nothing going on here. But then you read the actual 100% verbatim correct ritual, and it reads like the script of a gay bondage porn. You know, the worshipful master awaits your pleasure. Have you satisfied yourself? And that's what they don't want people to know, is just how truly gay they are.
Kind of like this paranoia, like if they allow anybody within the Brotherhood to be openly gay, it'll suddenly expose them as well, or draw attention.
You just hit the nail on the head. Yes.
So here's the thing with didn't gay marriage just get legalized? Why would they be so paranoid about it exactly? I mean,
Well, Vinny, us gay men have an old saying that, you know, the gayest thing you can do is worry about what another guy does with his dick.
Yeah.
So I think that it again boils down to high school jealousy. You've got guys who are obviously closet, you know, gay men who have spent their life married to a woman or whatever to live a lie, whether that's to get inheritance or get ahead in a conservative work environment or a church setting, whatever. And they've lived a lie. So when they see a younger guy coming in, happy, living his life in the open, the way they did long ago, yes, it causes quite a deal of grief and jealousy and resentment. And then they enact that out with whatever power they have upon those poor guys, and all hell breaks loose.
It's kind of vicious, isn't it?
Well, it's horrible. Interestingly, like you said, the recent Supreme Court ruling, yeah. Now that they're in direct violation of SCOTUS, we'll see what happens next, because never before has an idiot grandmaster gone and done something that's contrary to what the law of the land is. And if you read all the Masonic oaths and obligations, technically they're supposed to abide to the law of the land. So actually, ironically, this Grand Master Philip Hastings of Tennessee, he is the one who has broken Masonic law. He is the one who should be brought upon charges and expelled. But that's not happening. He's using his office in a corrupt manner to try and do this to others. So that should illustrate perfectly for anyone who does not yet understand the sickness prevalent in Freemasonry. This could not be the more perfect example that a 5-year-old could understand.
But there are people that accept this, that even see it happening right in front of them. And this is not just, of course, one thing that a whole bunch of brothers tolerate. There's many. And I wonder, what is the conditioning process by which they can basically accept what they're doing and not speak out?
There's a bit of a conditioning process of like that fear, you know, I mean, because you have the fear of God put into you the very first night when you're initiated to never, ever reveal the secrets of Freemasonry and blah, blah, blah. But then again, I see it as there's still a lot of guys, even the young ones, who don't want to rock the boat because they want to be captain someday. So you've got to, you know, and this is all ego. You've got to let your ego go. It was my understanding, the first lesson of being an adept of the esoteric arts is you've got to learn to divorce yourself from your ego. And these guys seem completely inept to do that. Because it's all about me, 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 me. Where's my painting? Where's my room named after me? Where's, you know, and that's what they're in it for. And I guess they're figuring now, well, if I stick it out, I used to think that way. Well, I'll stick this out for the long haul, and then I can make the changes I want from the inside once these Strom Thurmonds have all died off and, you know, they're out of the way and no more hatefulness and everything else. But now I know that that's never going to happen because they all raised apprentices who are going to think just like them. So, I mean, look at that guy that was been in the news all week that I think is now public enemy number one, at least over here in America. What's his name that raised the... He bought the rights to one of the AIDS drugs and raised it from $13.50 a pill to $750 a pill.
Whoa.
Yeah, now he's got basically the entire population wanting to string him up and burn him at the stake. But why would he do something like that? Well, because he's in love with himself and he's in love with money. Nothing else. And you can say the same for Freemasons. They're in love with themselves and their titles and want to get all the titles and money they can.
And of course, there's a number of different sects of Freemasonry, as Frater X has talked about, like the worst ones are the political Masons, the ones that are actually in there for a reason to gain power and influence for themselves. Those aren't the good ones.
That's the grouping I am speaking about right now with this whole Tennessee mess, all of it, yes.
And some of the other kinds of Freemasons are just completely innocuous. They're just good dudes.
That's true, but, you know, here's my problem and my observation with this Tennessee stuff I've been jacking with all week. You can be good, that's great, but why would you sit idle? Okay, let me ask you a question. Vinny, you're a good guy. If you're sitting at a cafe table enjoying a sandwich and a soda, off in the distance, 20, 30 feet, you see two guys just beating up and bullying some younger, weaker guy. Okay, are you going to really just sit there and like enjoy your sandwich and watch it like entertainment? Or are you actually going to sit there and go, hey, you know, back the F off or get the F out or, you know, I'm the type that I would take action. I would bust a chair over one of them. I mean, whatever. But you can't sit there and just watch and spectate others abusing others.
However, that's when it's happening right in front of you. If you're actually there when it's happening, there's a different story. Because I think, like, let's say one member of the Brotherhood in, say, New Zealand, for example, hearing about a story about somebody in Tennessee having the gay thing. Now, it's not happening right in front of him. He's not directly involved. It's not part of his social network or anything like that. It's not happening here. And so he just kind of like absolves himself of it. Like, for example, it's more related to, you see on the news that somebody, that two guys are beating up on one little guy. Do you suddenly get off your couch and try to go and help? You know, drive to the location, you know, it's a little
right, bit. Right. No, I see your point. I would say in that analogy, if there's a Freemason sitting in New Zealand that hears about what's going on in Tennessee, he should at least, as a brother, feel obligated to contact the Grand Lodge of Tennessee, begin a letter-writing campaign, maybe within his own lodge, and they need to bombard Tennessee with messages such as, remove this grandmaster, leave this brother who's been targeted alone, things like that. There are productive diplomatic things that can be done here to stop this. But again, no one's doing anything.
A petition.
Yes, exactly. Which would also be a first in the history of Freemasonry, but why is no one doing this? That's what I'm trying to get this point across, and believe me, I've got a lot of brothers who are rooting me on, even though I've been pretty nasty with the way I've been attacking Tennessee, but you know what? The reason why I'm being so nasty in my attacks is because I want that Grandmaster to feel and experience what it's like to be a gay man who's on the receiving end of those attacks. So maybe he'll better understand the brothers with which he is bringing down and trying to ruin their lives.
Can you really look at this situation? I mean, any one of us and think, oh, it's perfectly okay for this to happen. I mean, the dude's basically just, it's pretty straightforward from where I'm looking. The dude's breaking the law, you know?
He's not only breaking the law of the land, he's breaking numerous Masonic laws. That's why I said it's ironic that he's trying to accuse these gay brothers who committed the crime of going and getting married. Oh, my God. You know, yeah, it means he probably wanted to gay marry some guy long, you know, years ago, 100 years ago when he was in his 30s. And now, his life is over. I ran into these same types in Dallas when I worked at the Scottish Rite. They would look at me and just instantly hate me because it's like, how dare you be young and happy and living your life the way you want? You know,
it's funny you should say that because I was just thinking about this the other night. We had a night out with a whole bunch of conspiracy theorists. And we did a bit of comedy and a bit of music and some rapping and some activism speeches and things like that. Threw it all together at a bar. It's great. And I was just thinking about it, you know, like the people who like me are cool generally. And the people who instantly don't like me don't know that much about me, and they're actually kind of dicks, and I don't really want anything to do with them anyway. And I wish that they would stay out of my life.
Yeah, well, I mean, when people behave that way, it's almost like a mirror reflection type of thing. They're looking at you, but what they're really seeing are the traits about themselves that they wish they possessed. And when they see someone else possess those traits, it infuriates them. So what can you say about that? It's their own little psychosis. It's their own problem, and they should deal with it in a healthy environment. We go seek out the services of a psychiatrist. Go seek out the services of maybe a group therapy type of a setup, something. But talk to someone. Communicate. Masons seem completely and utterly inept to communicate, not only with each other, but most definitely the outside world. So they're a victim of their own system, and it's all been one exercise in futility, if you ask me. Describe Freemasonry in three words or less. Exercise in futility.
It seems to me that every kind of belief structure has to go through kind of changes. Like, for example, during the Spanish Inquisition, the Catholic Church operated in a slightly different manner to the way it does today. That's because the Catholic Church has changed somewhat over time in appearance and application in broad daylight, you know?
Yep.
I mean, but has Freemasonry done that?
No, it hasn't even come close. Are you kidding? They've still got laws on let me start that over. They still have Masonic laws on their Masonic books that read like something from Victorian England, you know, when buggery was illegal. I mean, come on, guys, come on.
You know, they need to at least update it somewhat.
In the case of what's happening in Tennessee, it wasn't on the books, and this Grand Master snuck in overnight and pulled, you know, a George W., and snuck this law in like some kind of executive order from his office when no one was looking. And now all of a sudden, these Masons in Tennessee wake up one morning to figure out, dude-on-dude love is illegal. So, he's in complete violation of everything there is Masonically, blah, blah, blah. They need to remove him. Are they? Well, it doesn't appear to be. Again, the solution is simple. Remove him. If he won't step down, remove his ass.
Now, you've also referenced that there's a lot of homoerotic imagery and themes in the Freemasonic rituals. What's all that about?
Well, I don't know, because no one can properly explain how it got there, so it's not like I could single one person out for you and say, oh, well, this guy, you know, he was gay, he wrote it. No, it's a hodgepodge compilation of stuff that they've assembled over the centuries, and as far as I'm concerned, it's all irrelevant anyway. So the Freemasons were designed to safeguard the Templar material. The Templars no longer need protecting, thank you. So, we'll muddle through, and Freemasonry can just go on and wither away and die from my vantage point. Now, it could be salvaged. It could be used for the purposes, in theory, it's supposed to be used for, like the charitable causes and blah, blah, blah. But if that's the case, then I think what we need to next ask ourselves is why, with all this money that they raise every day, millions and millions and millions, why do they hoard 90% of it and only give away 10%? You know, which I think takes us to an even more interesting and broader sweeping argument is, why does America keep allowing all of these quote-unquote 501c3 nonprofits to not pay taxes? Start taxing the Freemasons. Start taxing the damn Scientologists. Start taxing the Mormons. All of them, straight across the board. And you know what, Vinny? We would fix our deficit overnight.
Wait a second. If they're earning all this money, where's that money coming from? Are there, like, membership fees or some shit?
Oh, the membership fees barely contribute a thing to the overall monster. No, we're talking about big, big private donors. You know, the guys, like I've always said, the 33rd degree is not something you earn. It's something you purchase. You know, and of course they would tell you, oh, no, it's something you earn after a lifelong. It's an honorary. No, you drop $1 million on the table and you get your 33rd degree. That's how that works.
What do you get for your $1 million?
The 33rd degree.
No. But what does that mean? What does that entitle you to? What are the powers that go with it? The whole kit and caboodle. Is it like a package
Zero.
Thing? You know, it gets sent to your room at a thing, and you've got a nice new robe and a nice new hat and things of that nature that you can pimp out with.
Oh yeah, you get the bling blong, but no, the 33 equals zero. There's nothing. All that gets you is within that environment is, oh, you're a 33rd, let me kiss your ass, brother. No, they didn't do anything to earn that. They had whatever money they had handed to them on a silver platter and turned around and handed some more to the Masons on a silver platter. That's how you get that stupid degree. It's meaningless. It's worthless. If the Supreme Council called me tomorrow and said, you know what, we were so wrong, you're so right, and we've been jerks and blah, 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 we want to give you the 33rd degree to honor you, and I would say, you know what, take that thing and shove it up your ass, because to me it's worthless. Why would I want that?
What if I paid $2 million? Would they make me a 34th degree Mason?
Oh, no. See, what they do is they dangle that carrot, and then now you're a 33rd, right? But then they're going to tell you, oh, but there's another honor higher than this called the International Grand Cross of Honor. Don't you want that too, Vinny?
It sounds kind of like an occult pyramid scheme.
Uh-huh. Bingo. Ding, 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 ding. Who's the smartest boy in school?
It certainly wasn't me, or at least not in standardized testing anyway.
Well, yeah, same here. But yeah, no, it's just so ridiculous, all of it. And, you know, here they go again. So I'm trying to conduct the smear campaign I'm conducting, and I hope to create change whether they like it or not.
Now, speaking of making change, I heard reference on the show before this one, I think it was Chuck O'Challey's broadcast, about Trump and how people are getting sucked in by this nonsense, right?
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. And I saw this article headline. I was just, for fuck's sake. It says, yeah, rich? Yes. Well-behaved? Read up and you decide. The Trump clan. A snapshot. No drugs, no drama, just clean, decent, sober professionals. How refreshing. And I'm like, yes, the entire Trump family got off the drugs, drama, filth, indecency, and unprofessional insobriety just long enough to take a fucking photo.
Trump, I think if you were to ask most people that grew up in New York, they would tell you that he was nothing but a trust fund baby, and he's bankrupted four of his companies, and his family got rich to begin with off of tenements. See, now he wants you to look at all the office towers and the golf courses and everything like that, but years ago, it was all broken down tenements in, you know, the Bronx.
Sorry, I'm unfamiliar with tenements.
You know, the word tenement, it, like a slum apartment meant for an immigrant.
Oh, okay. A place for immigrant tenants. A tenement.
Yes. And, of course, now he's opposed to that, with, you know, immigration, which is ironic because his family wouldn't have their fortune had they not built the housing projects for the immigrants. So he's an idiot, and he's a bully, and he's a moron, and... I'm with Jesus. He's, you know, just stop it. And quite frankly, I think that we need to pass a law in America that no one may run for president who has bankrupted a country. I mean, a company. Because if you bankrupt a company, you might just bankrupt a whole country.
Well, then again, there might be somebody who only bankrupted themselves once and they never did it since. But if you've got serial bankruptcy, on the other
hand. Which he does.
Mm-hmm. Then it's a bit of a red flag.
Yeah, well, I mean, people don't listen. It's what can you do? And
God damn it! Why is the American public so fucking easy to manipulate? Jesus, you're in debt to billionaire bankers, all right? And you think that somebody who's also in billions of debt to bankers is going to somehow solve the problems in any way, shape, or form? It's going to continue the exact same agenda.
Well, I mean, when I think of Donald Trump and see him and the way he behaves publicly and everything, I could not think of a better analogy to give people listening of the types of personalities that I had to work around all day, every day when I worked on that Supreme Council. They're all little Donald Trumps. Egotistical, all they do is put you down. The sexual harassment and the bigotry and everything else is way over the top, and there's nothing you can do about it because you try to do something about it, and what does Donald Trump do? I'm gonna sue you out, you're a loser, same thing. That's exactly how Donald Trump would have made a great Supreme Council Mason. Oh my god,
I remember seeing a great Facebook photo with Donald Trump with his hairpiece like all over the place, you know, and it says, if Donald Trump becomes president, there will be hell to pay.
Well, what does concern me on a serious note about a guy like that is you give a guy like that kind of enormous power, like the office of president, and you're going to see the birth of a new Hitler. I promise you, mark my words.
Well,
I mean, think his ego's bad now, fuel it some more.
Why is it that dictators always look kind of funny, like they've got a funny mustache or a bad hairdo or some shit like that?
I don't know. Maybe they were taunted for it as kids and now they're like out to destroy and punish the world. I don't know.
Has there ever been like a really handsome villain, you know?
No, they've been playing clips of him going all the way back to like the 1980s and going on Oprah and all this kind of stuff, and even when he was in his, I'm presuming that was early 30s, no, he's ugly as sin.
We're talking about a man who has never been in his prime, who's only going to get worse, and you want him to rule your country. I can't fathom the stupidity. Oh, God.
Well, because everybody looks at his diarrhea of the mouth and thinks, oh wow, he really tells it like it is, this guy's really honest and truthful. No, and yet he also has, as of yet, to open up his books. When you run for president, the office of president over here in America, one of the requirements is you have to let the public and the oversight committee and all the different, anyway, you have to let them inspect your finances, even your offshore stuff. You have to lay it all out for inspection and audit. He hasn't done that yet, and I don't think he wants to do it. So actually, you may see Trump just completely drop out when he's faced with the reality of what he has to do. That may be the final nail in the coffin for his campaign.
Yeah, transparency is basically one of the things that will prevent scumbaggery from taking hold, especially of the presidency. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're just going to take a quick break here. And please, I'm kind of suffering financially right now, so if anybody could help by going to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, I'd very much appreciate it if you'd make a donation and start up an automatic payment. Thank you very much. We'll be right back after the break at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because you're being exterminated doesn't mean you can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? And my very special guest, James Wright, has actually had some attempts on his life, so that's probably not a very nice joke, Vinnie. Anyway, we're getting into the whole Freemasonic argument, right? Now, I want to see if I can draw the borders for this, because every argument has like a couple of sides, but there's also a spectrum that lays in between them. And what I'm interested in is finding the borders. Where do the arguments stop and where do they begin? What is the whole problem with Freemasonry? Where do the problems actually start? Where do they actually end? Do you understand that? Because I don't, and I think that it's such a complex issue that it's very difficult to define the parameters and be able to pop certain instances and go, okay, this is not actually a problem in here, we can keep that, but have a look at these, there's these problems and such and blah, blah, blah. Could you classify the entire organization as bad, or are there actually parts that are working really flawlessly?
Well, of course there's parts that are working flawlessly, but I mean, I would equate that question to asking someone, where did things start going wrong in America and where is it headed? I mean, it's such a large, old, and complex machine that the problems tend to start on local levels, metastasize into state levels, and kind of just sit there and incubate in a pile of sick. So trying to get something done about it is futile in what happened with me. It was futile with what happened with the guy in Kentucky. And so far, it's been futile with this Tennessee thing. And, I should also mention that Georgia is slated to be the next one to cause a problem like this, because the Grand Master of Georgia is good buddies with the Grand Master of Tennessee. I'm assuming that they're gay lovers, and they're both now targeting gay men, except in Georgia, they've yet to find one to target. So that's why I'm hoping to send a message with this stuff with Tennessee before they have that chance to denigrate and gang stalk someone in Georgia, you know, to like back off.
Whoa. So maybe that it will produce a chilling effect on any gay Masonic couples to not want to come forward in the future.
Well, that's what they're trying to do, but I don't see why. I mean, we're trying to move forward, you know, in history, not backward. And I know these guys would love to move backward, but the ones who want to move backward are the ones who want to retain their precious little power. But what is that power? It's a false sense of power. What does that really give you? Okay, yeah, you're a leader in a subsect of this global cabal. You're a shot caller. Okay, fine, great. But at the end of the day, what really do you have one up on your next door neighbor? Not really, because chances are your next door neighbor is actually a whole hell of a lot happier than you are. So, because you got to keep feeding that monkey. And once the monkey's on your back, you can never get it off.
So, again, trying to get back to finding the borders here. Where does it start? When you first get indoctrinated into it,
mm-hmm.
From the first ritual, from the get-go, there's something wrong with it, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because that's when they start putting that fear-based control into you, and, you know, you're with us now, you dare not speak of this to that profane public, blah, 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 and
Could you be specific? How did they put the fear into you? What are the threats and things?
Well, part of your first oath when you're initiated, you know, that I will not write, indict, print, paint, stamp, stain, cut, carve, engrave, inlay, or enamel anything, you know, any of the secrets of Freemasonry, the ritual, what you hear go on inside of a closed lodge, anything that is supposed to be for lodge and Mason ears only. Even if I was to walk in and give a presentation in a closed lodge on kittens are cute, okay? According to Masonic law, I'm not allowed to leave and go run around and saying that, we were just talking about how cute that kittens are. That's how these people are. And that's where the problems start. Because then when you have no recourse, you have absolutely no one to turn to or whatever, you're forced to turn to the very ones who make it that way.
Whoa. That sounds exactly like the Police Complaints Conduct Authority in New Zealand. If you want to file a complaint against the police, you have to go to the Police Complaints Conduct Authority, which is staffed exclusively by police. And surprise, precisely, surprise, they don't bring any of their brothers in blue to justice. It's exactly the same mechanism, isn't it?
Or when the public finally succeeded in getting an inquest in Britain into the death of Diana. Where was it held? The Royal Courts of Justice. Who were the suspects in the killing? The royal family. So what justice do you see happening in the royal courts of justice. I mean, come on.
Sounds exactly like a company that was paid by Monsanto to test whether or not their food was safe, surprisingly coming up with the result that their food is safe.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, drive by any Monsanto corn field in small town America and look at all the people with cancer. Yeah. No.
It was some kind of outbreak or whatever, like somebody was suffering from super flu. I think it was like hyped up for the alternative. You're like, oh, we've got the super flu. We're all dying from the GMO corn pollen. Oh, we're so screwed, bro. We're so screwed.
Well, hopefully we're not so screwed, and hopefully people, I mean, like with this Freemasonry stuff, hopefully, I mean, because I know for a fact that there's a lot of Masons rooting me on, even though they won't publicly say that, but I hear it privately, and I respect that, and therefore don't blurt out names of those who do, but it's going to take more than that. It's going to take more than rah-rah, sis-boom-bah. It's going to take action. These guys are going to have to step up to the plate and say, no, that's a bad grandmaster. Very, very bad grandmaster. And make him go sit in the corner or put him in a kennel or take him in to be euthanized. I don't care.
Well, what let's say he's got a violation in Masonic law. What is the punishment? You know,
well, this guy, this grandmaster, it's been a long time since I practiced Masonic law. It seems to me he's in violation of at least five different points of it, and so the correct thing to do in that system would be to bring him up on trial. But see, they're all sitting around scratching their heads wondering, oh, but how do we do that? Because we're talking about the current Grand Master, and there is no law on the books actually about trying a Grand Master. So it's almost like a dictator, if you will.
So it's actually written into Masonic law that the Grand Master can't be brought to trial for anything?
It's not written in saying those exact words, but if you go through the Masonic law, you'll find that there is no protocol to try a Grand Master. So it's, yeah. Yeah, for example, if a problem with our president, we impeach him. But there is no impeachment process on the books for a Grand Master. This has never happened before.
Never happened before because there's no protocol? Or correct. Never happened before because there's no call for it?
Oh, there's certainly been calls for it throughout time in various jurisdictions. But no one has ever attempted to do that, because again, you're dealing with this chase the carrot mentality that if I, John Q. Mason, was to be the one to do this and break this barrier, they're going to come at me with the heat of 1,000 suns, which is true. And so it's a fear-based control mechanism. You know, you stay in line, you do not question the authority, and that's part of the Masonic oaths as well. You're not supposed to question the authority. You're not supposed to criticize Masonry publicly or privately, as those Masonic charges of my own I sent you a couple years ago read out. So as you can see, you can't even go to your official and say, hey, brother, I've got a problem with da-da-da-da. Because then you're going to be in violation of Masonic law, and you're going to find yourself on trial a lot quicker than the person who's doing the bad stuff. That's how broken that system is. That's why it needs to go.
Wipe it away completely? I mean, well, I don't even actually understand the lifestyle or how much of your life it actually takes up and what you would have to do different in your life if suddenly Freemasonry was no longer a part of it.
Well, I can answer that. It's simple. After I walked away, or ran away screaming, rather, I got my life back. Up until that point, I was working 90 hours a week at the Supreme Council's behest. My friends were like, are you still alive? We never see you. What do you? Can't you hang out on Sunday? Nope, I'm working. You mean they're still making you work on Sunday even? Yep. Why? Well, there's more to do. There's always more work to do. And you're not getting tired of this? Well, at the time, no, I love my job. I love my job. You know, no, these guys just can't bear the thought of losing that title, that position, that exaltation, whatever. And they just need to get over it, because you know what? I am millions times happier not being a part of that establishment than I was in it with all those decorations and the access I had to everything. And nah, it's not worth it. It's not worth it what you pay for it emotionally.
So you get into it, right? It's kind of like going into a gang, and there'll come a time when they actually ask quite a lot of you in order to remain in it or to advance right. any further, right?
Oh, yeah, it's never enough. It's that carrot. It's never enough.
So it's based upon an illusion that if you keep doing what you're told, you'll be rewarded for it.
Oh, of course. Yeah, you got to admit it's genius. I mean, it here you have a nonprofit with mega millions under their belt, and 99% of their workforce is free. It's volunteer. It's slave labor. So not only do they not have to pay taxes, they don't have to write paychecks either. So why do you think they're so rich and powerful?
What do they do with their money?
They hoard it. They give, like I said, they hoard about 90%. They give away about 10% to charities, which are usually their own charities, by the way. I mean,
specifically, how is it hoarded? Is it divvied up among the grandmasters or what?
No, they stick it away in bank accounts and have big capital management firms like Goldman Sachs or Fisher or whoever manage it for them and make money and everything else. So, see, again, they could spend a whole lot more and still be completely in the green.
Are they listed on the SEC or anything like that? Are they trading under a company name?
Oh, are you kidding? No, that's all kept off books. They claim that 501c3 exemption just like a church, and no one has ever been allowed to open and inspect their books. The only person who can open it and inspect a lodge's books is the secretary of that lodge, and, well, I guess the worshipful master as well. So no, it never happens.
It has never happened?
Never.
Neither to the church nor any Freemasonic lodge or anything like that. And there's a whole bunch of donations coming in. 90% of it basically goes missing. What are they buying? Cigars and brandy and then keeping the other 85%?
Oh, they renovate their buildings into these gauche palaces. That's why Scottish Rite buildings, for example, look like, you know, marble castles that are about 40,000 square feet. Yeah, they spend it on themselves. And why? I mean, maybe 20 years ago you could have made the argument, well, we've got such high rising membership numbers and everything, but that's not the case now. Now their membership is plummeting. So do you really need all those new flat screens and expensive toys and everything else? No, you don't.
And so there's no actual like embezzlement going on for the individuals. It's mostly just kind of like a collective gang clubhouse.
Right. Well, no, yeah, I wouldn't say that there's embezzling going on, but there's absolutely money laundering going on, because you can put $10,000 into a lodge, that lodge can send it to a different lodge, that lodge can send it to a different lodge, and then it winds back up where it started. And you got to say legitimately that, oh, well, we donated that. You know, so it's just all one big game of semantics and money washing and everything else, just to keep, again, retain their power, retain their prominence. Yeah.
I just don't understand, like, why just spend it on flat screens and marble palaces? I mean, aren't we talking about sick people here who have desires that might cost a lot of money?
Well, like the Scottish Rite building in Dallas, even if they were having to pay taxes and this, that, the other, and for all of their workers and everything, that building is so old and so huge that just to light and air it and do the usual repairs of things, that you know, a light switch shorted out, things like that, it costs approximately $5,000 a month to maintain that building. Sometimes $10,000 a month, depending on what all is going on.
If they've got millions on the books, that's nothing.
Well, right. And that's, I guess, one argument they would make of why they need to keep so much on the books. But again, their numbers are falling so bad that, like, even the famous original Valley of Los Angeles, located on Wilshire Boulevard downtown of the Scottish Rite. That's closed. Gone, sold, closed. They couldn't afford to keep it open because no one wanted to belong to it anymore.
Well, even when people do want to belong to them, I mean, what do they contribute personally? I mean, like we mentioned the fees before, I mean, obviously they're nominal, but how much is it? Like, do you pay monthly, yearly, what?
Yearly, unless, of course, you do what they call endow your dues, which means you pay one exorbitant amount one time, and then you never have to pay dues to that particular lodge ever again. But that's only on a lodge-by-lodge basis. So if you belong to 10 lodges and you endow your membership in one, you're still going to be paying the yearly dues in the other nine, you see? So they'll get you, they will nickel and dime you and $5 you to death around every corner. And then, of course, you get the guys like I was describing who they want a social climb, they want to collect titles. So they're perfectly happy to cut a check for $1 million or whatever to get that 33rd, get their plaque on a wall, their painting up on a wall. Yeah, it's just more feeding of this insatiable ego.
Now, we have in New Zealand here a number of very high-profile people, including the Prime Minister, who's been seen, you know, photographed with the little Illuminati eye pyramid, well, the Freemason all-seeing eye pyramid hand symbol, you know, how you've got your two thumbs and all your fingers pointed at each other to make a little pyramid shape. So he's photographed like that in the newspaper with his entire cabinet just after winning the election. He gives out scholarships from Freemasons New Zealand. We've got pictures of that in the paper as well. So where this all ends up is that they've got power and influence in the highest of places, right? And I was just wondering, I mean, what kind of US representatives, like, you know how you've seen all these documentary films where they go through the president's new cabinet and all the kind of lobbyists and all of the different organizations and clubs and things like that they belong to. But I'd like to see one where we look over the presidential cabinet or the New Zealand cabinet or whatever and actually find out which one of them's how many of them are Masons. How much power does this organization have? What reach does it have?
Well, yeah, the reach is global and the power is in their networking. They have a database that's a piece of software privately developed by the Supreme Council. I've told you this before on other shows, but to those who haven't heard, it's called Sentinel. And what Sentinel does is it keeps track of every Mason on the planet based on their vocation. So if you have a problem in Timbuktu, okay, you can log in. There's only 50 people with login credentials to this system. I used to be one of them in 2010. And you look up, okay, we've got a situation busting loose in Hasavlaz, Nevada. Okay, so they call up whoever they can, the officials there, whether that's city council, police, whoever, and try to push whatever their agenda is they pushed. Through that guy, the attitude being, well, now, brother, you know this is for the good of the fraternity. And then so the guy on the receiving end of that phone call thinks, oh, well, yeah, okay, I'm obligated to do this to protect it. And that's the whole fallacy of the place. And that's where their power is. And if Masons would just wake up to this, that power would crumble.
And that's the way the cookie crumbles indeed. However, again, we've got to look at this kind of thing because there's a lot of money unaccounted for, and is there any kind of like child trafficking sort of stuff? You know, like they're paying like hundreds of grand or whatever to pay people to kidnap kids, like real dark, perform dark rituals on them and shit. You know, nothing like that.
Well, it's so compartmentalized that you're never going to hear about it. And actually, I guess I'll go ahead and bring this up. One of the things that I've been going through is this great big file that was delivered to my house. And evidently, my father's family left instructions with their attorney to have this delivered to me when I was 33 years old. Why 33? I don't know. Maybe that's the little Masonic haha code of it. I don't know, but it's basically all the files that my mother's family had destroyed about the truth of what went on around 1982 to 1984 when I was, you know, born to about 2 years old. Because I was always told that my father was this horrible person who took off and he wasn't even there when I was born and he hated my mother and he was abusive to her and everything. Well, the files that were all destroyed that I now have copies of would suggest that I didn't know this, been quite shocking for me to read, that no, it was actually my father who wanted me and was fighting to try and retain custody of me, but going up against my family and as rich and powerful as they were, he didn't stand a chance. And in these files, it clearly states that my mother's family had me kidnapped and taken to New York City while I was 2 years old, the whole duration of 1984, and hid me out while my father was desperately searching for me and trying to get custody of me. Meanwhile, back in Texas, what was happening was that the attorney that was representing him was being disbarred and attacked in every way imaginable. My family was doing everything to get my father removed from the state. And considering my mother's father was good friends with people like Henry Wade, LBJ, those types, that was very, very easy for them to do. And I just feel so bad for my dad. It's like, God, the only mistake he ever made was getting involved with one of the women in my family. So, yeah, you want to talk kidnapping, you want to talk lawyers openly threatening people on paper and everything else. Yeah, this is what these people do.
That must have been a hell of a blow to read that, bro.
Well, I look at it like this. I dealt with all of that years ago, of course, not knowing that, but I suppose at this time, and maybe that's why they waited so long to have this information sent to me, so I would be at a place in my life when I would be more mature and more capable of handling it and taking the information in. If I would have read these files when I was 18, 21, 25, I might have had a nervous breakdown. But at least now I can read it and look at it analytically and calmly, and it is what it is, you know. And at least, like, I also have a stack of my father was a meticulous journal keeper, and so I have all of his journal entries, obviously, from the period of my birth, the period of their divorce, and all of that, and in them, he says, you know, like my grandfather and my mother and all of them were completely destroying his faith in humanity and his trust in people and all of that. So really, I just hope that talking about it and bringing this information out that's been suppressed for 31 years is, you know, enough that wherever my father is looking down, at least maybe I'm hoping to restore his faith in people a little bit to do the right thing.
What did they do to you when you were kidnapped, though?
I was hidden out some, I don't even know where. I have no memories of this. I would have been 2 years old. My earliest memories are about that time and take place in Dallas, so I'm assuming that was when we'd returned. But actually, I do have a memory of being in my mother's. She had a turquoise Firebird at the time, and I have a memory of being in my car seat, being driven in that car to the airport and flying out on a plane. But beyond that, I don't remember anything. And we were stuck out. We hid, I don't know, my mother has always had friends in Manhattan, so I'm assuming we stayed there. I don't know.
Have you speculated what might have happened?
Well, that probably is what happened, but the reason why it was happening is because I was being kept away from my father, so he couldn't get in and get me and unkidnap me, you know. So they were too busy ruining his life and running him out of the state. And then once they succeeded in that, then I guess it was a green light and my mother returned with me. And I mean, what they did was illegal. My mother and her father and their attorney should have all gone to prison over what I'm reading in these documents. And yet my father was the one who did jail time for it and had his life ruined and his finances ruined and everything. It's just like, you know, and of course, what are we dealing with here? A big fat group of Masons. So...
So you don't think you were, like, subjected to some kind of, like, ritual abuse or something like that that you can't remember, or...
If I was, I don't remember it. I don't know. It would be interesting to go through that, what do they call it, the hypnotic regression or whatever. I'd be open to doing that. I don't know what might come out of it, but it'd be interesting, I'm sure.
Yeah, because I interviewed Jay Parker about some of the ritual abuse that he went through. You know, like being lowered in a coffin into a grave and father dressed up like a god and reading from a book that said, "This is the book of life and your name is not in it," you know, as a real young kid. And I just think that basically there must be, obviously there's certain families that practice this kind of ritual abuse to their children. And I think it's just sort of like a way of opening them up to some form of possession or to regress them from kind of like higher thought functions and that kind of thing to make them a bit more reptilian brained, you know, a bit more fight or flight.
Yeah.
Kind of the
yeah.
hell.
Well, I would say that based on my father's journals, when I was only 2 days old, I was already subjected to crazy, nasty abuse in the regard that my mother and father were both in the hospital room with me, their baby. And after hours, my grandfather came bursting through the doors with a cavalry of armed guards and had my father ripped away from me. So, I mean, when you're a newborn baby, 2 days old, opening your eyes for the first time, that's what I saw.
That's some horrific shit, bro.
It's all here on paper. I don't know. I feel so bad for my dad. It's like, God, poor guy. He never stood a chance going up against my family. And in his journals, he said that happened because the day before, when I was 1 day old, he actually stood up to my grandfather and cussed him out and told him to get out of their lives, quit meddling in their affairs, and that's how he responded. Burst through the hospital room door with armed guards, hold my father at gunpoint, and drag him out.
And then kidnap you.
Yep.
A hell of a way to enter the world.
Yep. And they say I'm not from one of those sick bloodline families.
Well, there's your pedigree right there, bro.
Yes, my mother's family is definitely in love with their DNA, and I suppose they felt that theirs was superior. Ironically, now that I've taken the wherewithal upon myself to do all that genealogy and stuff of my father's side as well, they're just as quote-unquote royal as my mother's side. So it really just came down to a pissing match of dollars and connections. And he was not on home turf. He and his family were from Mississippi and had a bottled spring water company. So it wasn't like they were broke. I mean, they had money. They had clout in their own community there, you know, Jackson, Mississippi. But he was on Dallas turf, and that was my grandfather's turf.
Yeah. So it was a kind of power play.
Yeah, and I was the prize. Isn't that nice? To be an object?
Possession of human life, right? What kind of creature does that?
My mother. Yeah, it's sick, you know, and to make it sicker, my mother made it painfully obvious to me my entire life that she didn't want me, and it was forced on her and blamed it on her father and all of that. It's like, well, then I should have been with the parent who obviously on the papers I'm reading now fought for me all the way up until I was 6 years old, until finally he was so broken and was out of money and everything else that he could no longer fight.
Yeah, that sounds exactly like what happens with a lot of fathers here in New Zealand who get their children taken off them by child, youth, and family services.
Mm.
Yeah. And I noticed this, that men get broken easiest when you take their children, when you hurt their children. That's the thing that hurts the most. well, as far as I've seen, and some of them don't cope with it very well. Male suicide rates are like 3, 4, 5 times that of female suicide rates, you know. Alcohol,
yeah, that's what they tried to convince me of, that was what his fate was, that, oh, he just couldn't handle all this, so he killed himself, what a coward. But no, now I know differently too, because these files I have the initial police report, because, see, you got to remember, my grandfather told him that if you ever come back to Dallas and try and come after him ever, you'll be dead. Well, he did come back to Dallas and try to come after me when I was 16 and was found dead. And I now have the police report saying that the front door was unlocked. The officers that responded to the scene wrote it up as unexplained. They later tried to say that it was suicide from an alcohol overdose, but I have the toxicology now as well, saying the alcohol is the box for unknown is checked on the toxicology report. And then they produced a suicide note, but the suicide note does not match his handwriting in all of his journals. And not only that, but the note itself reads like something from a Hollywood movie. Goodbye, cold, selfish, cruel world. Da, da, da. And I took it to a friend of mine here who deals with those kind of things, and they looked at it and said, I'm sorry, this is what I just said. This is like Hollywood. You know, who writes a suicide note like this? Unless they're purposely trying to make it sound like a suicide note.
It's suicide ex machina.
Right.
Murder, right? And it seems that there's also cover-ups here. So we're not just talking about a bunch of powerful people in the Brotherhood. I mean, there's obviously connections throughout this. Like, going with the theory at one point that the establishment of Freemasonry was also a recruiting pool for people to basically bring into the criminal cabal.
Oh, totally. Yeah, it always has been. And they love to say, no, it's not, and we don't recruit. Yes, they do. Well, just stop with that. Yes, they do. They always have. They always will, for as long as they're around.
What exactly is the mechanism? I don't know how somebody like comes into a draft organization, and usually what happens if you're getting into these connections, you know, there's some kind of hierarchical structure. So you go from like a salesman to sales manager to a assistant CEO or whatever the hell. And then you get offers from other corporations and things like that. And you start hopping around, you go overseas, you get a big job there, and then you get promoted. You become the CEO of some other major corporation. And then you become some kind of congressman who's self-funded with your bazillions of dollars and all your connections that you've had in some goddamn scumbaggery cabal global syndicate of business financiers and pieces of trash filth. And then you get elected and you wind up then encountering a whole bunch of lobbyists, and they go to you, hey bro, we're going to pay you a hell of a lot of money to do basically exactly the opposite of everything you've told everybody, which you told everybody was a complete lie anyway, so whoop-de-fucking-do. Here's some money. Keep doing what you're doing, son. Good job. And he just kind of stays in there, sort of like festering, like some sort of unchecked scab that keeps getting infected and keeps oozing pus out and needs to constantly throw money into it in order to contain the pus that seems to just bleed out from his orifices. And every time he goes and utters a political speech that makes people who have any idea what the hell this guy's actually talking about and actually doing in his real life want to stab themselves in the forehead with a screwdriver, preferably a Phillips head, in order to dislodge your frontal lobe in order to make the pain of the frustration of the lies and scumbaggery go the fuck away.
Well, that sums it up about, yeah. Yeah, you know, it just needs to stop. That's my conclusion. The whole thing is broken. I used to think when I was in it that I could fix it from the inside. I was wrong. Then I started thinking I could fix it from the outside, and I think I was still wrong, because they don't want to be fixed. They want to sit there and keep exalting themselves into oblivion. And it's like, so what are you going to have? You're going to have some great big gauche palace with just yourself sitting there being what? Grand poobah to an empty audience? I mean, come on. How pathetic is that?
Yeah. Freemasonry is a big horny dog. It doesn't want to be fixed.
That is true. And I don't know. I'd hoped that, you know, maybe, well, okay, these old curmudgeons, they'll die off and the younger breed will come in and really be the game changer. Well, no, because now we're seeing like that guy that hiked up, bought the rights to that AIDS drug and hiked it up from $1,350 to $750 a pill. The guy's only 32 years old. So there's a whole new generation of little greedy scumbag Hitlers coming of age. So it's not going to stop unless we, the people, stop it. You got to take away the toy from the tantrum-throwing children. And that's the only solution.
Now, isn't it ironic as well that in order to stop children being taken and kidnapped, you need to take the toys away from these big children every time they abuse their power?
Yep.
We live in a society of lax consequences for real evil and massive consequences for either innocuous behavior or actually doing the right thing.
Well, and that's, I would say, the root of the problem with a place like Freemasonry is when you're dealing with sociopaths, which you've studied and dealt with closely as well, Vinny, you realize after a certain point that there's really no way to fight them unless, of course, you resort to tactics that they themselves would use. You know, that whole saying, fight fire with fire. The problem is that all these good guys in the world, good guys in Freemasonry, yes, of course they outnumber the bad, but they don't have what it takes to subdue the bad. Because these are guys who are so good, they would never dream of stabbing someone in the back or fucking someone over or...
Basically, here's the idea. You're going to fight fire with fire against the people who manufacture flamethrowers.
Yeah, basically. I mean, when these guys are they want to gang stalk me, I'm going to gang stalk them right back. And that's what I'm doing with this experiment of mine in Tennessee. Let this grandmaster be gang stalked and see how he likes it. See how it feels to do that to people. Maybe then he'll understand.
Psychopaths don't have the ability to understand. They only have the ability to run away from consequences for their actions. They don't feel bad for it. They don't change their mind about the things. They don't actually care about what it is that they're doing. They just want it, and they don't know why they want it. They just want it.
Well, that's why it needs to be taken away, so it's no longer theirs to have. And then maybe they'll be capable of a little bit of introspective thinking. Doubtful, but perhaps.
Well, as a famous psychologist once said, the only cure for psychopathy is a bullet.
Yeah, I'm going to have to tentatively agree with that.
Now, I've been thinking about this a lot lately, and there is a lot of, you know, controversy about the taking of human life, regardless of what the reason for it is. And I'm just thinking about the passage of history, how many people have died because psychopaths are in power, and how in shamanic ancient ceremonies and things of that nature, when children were born, the shaman would be able to identify psychopaths early and they would kill them right then and there. And I wonder, what do we want to trade? Do we want to trade the killing of innocent life when it's first born, or the killing of vast amounts of life by allowing it to live? I just getting into this really strange conundrum, and only a psychopath would find this a very easy fix. Well, obviously you do got to sacrifice for the greater good and you know, kill the innocent children and do all that. And I'm just like, far out. There's no way to actually fight an immoral person and maintain your moral ethic, which I think is the main reason why through the course of history, even when good people overthrow the bad, tyrannical, psychopathic government, it only gets infested from within, and they get infected with the very thing that they originally fought to fight against. And I remember quite a few years ago, I got to speak to the late Bob Chapman, and I asked him, do you think there's ever going to be a time in history where basically scumbaggery has been vanquished? Never to return. Is it possible to create a system so good that all forms of psychopathy and power mongering and lust and things of that nature could actually be stopped and have those desires basically not rewarded anymore and phase them out. And he says, no, it's not possible because it's a perennial problem. And, you know, to my mind, it just sort of thinks about the cost of eternal vigilance and sort of self-sacrifice, right? Because if you're going to go up against these people, it's going to destroy you. And you know that it's going to. And after the process of actually fighting these people is over, if you wind up being in power as a result of the fact that you're fighting against these people, you're inherently corrupted by the fact that you had to fight them because of the trauma that you've suffered. And you think you know what you're fighting for, but there's just so much pain inside the people that have to fight on the front lines that when they go back and it's peacetime, they can't reprogram that code. Sort of like the...
Like the Templar returning home from the Crusades. Yes, yes.
It's kind of like a... There's no future for people like us, James.
I know, I feel that way a lot, Vinny. I really do. I never... People are always, oh, you should quit smoking because you're going to regret it when you're 90 years old. And it's like, yeah, but you know what? I've never once envisioned myself living to 90. And I don't mean that in a way like, oh, woe is me. I hate life. I'm suicidal. No, I mean that I've made so many enemies and I have made so many situations for myself that are very precarious that I'm not going to see old bones. I don't believe that for a second. I'm too wrapped up in a world that is kill or be killed.
And, you know, I see, like, what was his name? I think it was Martin Luther King or whatever, saying, I might not be there to stand on the mountain with you. And I wonder as well, I mean, if I put an effort in my entire life to expose scumbaggery to help humanity, I'm not actually going to be able to be around to enjoy it, you know? Like, there is no place for me in a time of peace where the challenges have kind of been met and you can sit back and relax. It doesn't sound like a place where I want to be, but it sounds
right,
like...
Right, I've had that thought too. It's like, what if Freemasonry was just vanquished completely, as well as all these other cults, Scientologists, everybody A to Z was gone tomorrow morning? What would I do? What go apply for a job to go work like a good little worker bee in a cubicle? I wouldn't know what to do. I'd be sitting there like, all right, who do I fight next? You know, yeah, it is a conundrum. This is a pretty deep point you're bringing up. Yeah,
I was actually I had tears coming out of my eyes just back here, bro. That realization hit me pretty hard just now. I was really concerned because I wonder if the dedication to whatever cause that we've gotten ourselves into, and it's not just you and me; it's all of us, really. Mm-hmm. Is the point that the fight is what defines us and the cause is what motivates us. When the fight is over and when the cause is won, there is no longer any purpose to our life. We don't have a dual purpose. We have one purpose, and the only other thing that we do other than, you know, our purpose in life is to try and simply, relax and enjoy what little life we have. Right? Is that what existence is? Trying to fight for something really, really hard and in your off time trying to recover from how hard the fight is and never actually being able to enjoy the full fruits of your labor, and it's only going to be passed on to benefit future generations who will never know the struggle, and there'll be only a different struggle for them. Now, does that mean that our existence is predicated on one thing? Playing your part in the course of history, knowing that you won't be there to see how awesome your effect has been, to know that you simply do what your instinct drives you to do,
That is quite the conundrum. I mean, for me personally, I'm not sitting around waiting for the day that I get to see some kind of statue erected of me. Oh, he was such a warrior. He was such a good fighter. He took down half the Masons. He did this. If that was to come to pass, you know, great. If I'm not there to see it, oh well. It's not something that I can subject myself to losing sleep over, you know. And not only that, but I mean, I think we live in a duality. So I think that evil and wrongdoing are always going to exist. It's just how much of it is there going to be? It's out of balance. There's too much evil. There's too much everything. So the actions of people like you, me, everybody else in this game, all we can really ultimately hope to do in the long-term effects is to have been there, done that, and inspire others to do the same. And have lived on the right side of history instead of the wrong side, where 100 years now you're one of those, you know, oh, that evil bastard or whatever. I wouldn't want to be remembered as that. So I would rather be remembered as nothing, not be remembered, than be remembered as some sort of horrible cancer on society.
You know, what's ironic is most of the people who get really remembered were a horrible cancer on society, and all the good people just kind of get played down a little bit. You know, oh, he was a nice guy, but...
Well, it's too bad we don't have the ability to do a case study and what they come back reincarnated as. That might add some incentive to not being a bad person.
Yeah, there's something to be said for that. But in my opinion, if you're incarnated as a human being, you've got the ability of choice, which means you can thwart karma. You can indeed inflict it, you know? Like, you can bring justice in a situation where nature wouldn't actually be very quick at dispensing it.
It's true, although, like in the case of Buck Howard, my number one source of all my abuse and gang stalking at the Scottish Rite, I remember him saying to me many times that he intended on sticking around there and running that place for many, many decades to come. And it looks like when it was all said and done, he only had it for 5 years, and he died at 61. So as rich as he was and as powerful as he was, he only had that power 5 years, and now it's gone. And can he take his money with him? No.
You probably made it a very stressful thing. You know, you could have actually been one of the causal factors in his death. Did he die of a stroke or a heart attack or a masturbation accident?
I was assuming that it was a heart attack from all of the transsexual whores that were in his bed, but, that's just my speculation. Yeah, I would certainly hope that I did add to his stress level, because he certainly added to mine. So,
well, you gave him 5.
They can dish it, but they can't take it, is my experience.
Well, you gave him 5 years of constant stress while being in a powerful position that he was actually new to at the same time with one of the worst kind of debacles and public crises in a long, long time. For that person operating under that hat to have to deal with. And not being terribly young, probably not having a great diet, and maybe having no fucking soul. It probably took a toll on the body, you know? Stress is a killer. And good on you, James. You fucking killed the bastard.
Yeah, no, Masons in Dallas have been steadily reporting to me for the last 5 years that ever since the day I left, his health was in a steady decline. Last time I laid eyes on him, he was healthy as a horse.
I got the most brilliant idea ever. It's illegal to kill somebody, right? But it ain't illegal to constantly stress people out to the point that they die from it. Now, here's a new activism tool. Do you know? Stress him out until he dies.com. we can have just a whole list of just an entire laundry list of people that should be dead that we can't kill, but we're gonna try. You know, we're gonna give it a go.
New slogan for your show, Vinny Eastwood, where necessity is the mother of invention.
Yeah. Killing you with laughter, you know, like, you know, and I'm joking, of course. So if there's anybody out there who's going, he's advocating killing people, I'm not advocating killing people. I'm advocating harassing to the point that their body gives out on them kind of thing. All right. It's not technically murder. Just like the same way that Barfoot and Thompson, a local real estate company here, isn't murdering people by rejecting all their attempts to reconcile their mortgagee debt and sell their entire future out from under them and have that person's death result in suicide with no recompense or punishment of any kind to anybody working for Barfoot and Thompson. All right? See, now, the law is on our side on this one.
A soul, grasshopper. Yes.
Use the weapons of the enemy against them. I mean, really? Who would...
Yeah,
who
would they gang stalk you, gang stalk them. They want to harass you.
We have millions of keyboard warriors out there, bro. Okay, make yourself useful. There are several people who you can contribute to the death of out there, okay? Pick your targets, concentrate your efforts over a long period of time, and you can't let up now, you know? It'll be like back in Stalin's days, you know, where they do a big 5-year plan or something like that, and a whole bunch of people ended up dead. It'll be like that, except only bad people will end up dead.
Yep. Oh, no, I've got that Grandmaster in Tennessee running scared. So, again, to those out there listening, this is a call out to those out there who wish to help. If you want to see this Grandmaster go down for his crimes, troll the ever-loving hell out of him. His name is Philip Dwight Hastings. He is the Grandmaster of the Grand Lodge of Tennessee. Look it up on social media. Well, their social media is shut down now, but look it up anyway. Send them emails at the Grand Lodge of Tennessee's website. There's a thing on the page where you can email the Grandmaster directly. Email him and let him know that he's a douche rag. Email him and let him know that he's a fuckface. And just keep doing it. Do it by the thousands. I promise you this guy will be gone within the week. Please, people listening, troll this bastard.
Now, there's the thing. Trolling can be used for good, right?
Yes.
However, as we troll, let us not forget that we cannot turn into the people that we are trolling.
Yes, you got to stay true to yourselves, true to the cause. When you've done your part, turn it loose. Don't turn into a total troll. Just use their weaponry and their tactics and their mind games and psyopses right back against them. Because you know what? When you do it, I promise you, you will have hours of laughter at how they can dish it and not take it.
Why do you think they use these tactics on us, ladies and gentlemen? It's because they work. All right? Every single kind of scheme that these people have come up with can backfire in their place if only we have the courage to use it against them and dispense a rather ironic form of justice. I like ironic forms of cosmic justice, don't you, James? I think there's something inherently masonic about it, which is just lovely. All right, thank you very much. Dial mformason.weebly.com is James's website, and we will see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Please donate at the vinnyeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood, like, go ahead. Make my news.